Today, there are more than 2.2 million men, women, and juveniles living behind bars in the United States. Nearly 80% of them are in the system because of crimes related to substance abuse, according to the ACLU. With so many prisoners facing addiction and other underlying issues, what does the path toward rehabilitation look like? Journalist Maya Chenoir argues that the system as a whole is broken, designed more to punish than to help those in need. Her own sister Keely struggled with a heroin addiction and became stuck in the revolving door of incarceration. For 15 years, Keely bounced back and forth between jail, mandated drug treatment, electronic monitoring, and probation.
All of these things forced her to be abstinent from drugs, which was not really a point that she was at yet, that she could make that choice. And so it was this forced abstinence, which all the research has shown doesn't work to treat addiction. So she was trapped in this cycle of different forms of punishment, and some of those forms of punishment were said to be for her own good, but they just kind of wrapped her deeper and deeper into this cycle of addiction and trauma.
Keely died from an overdose in February, just one day after leaving a mandated abstinence-based drug treatment center. Chenoir says that these reforms created to help Keely just pushed her further down a path of no return.
I know that in a different kind of society that did not punish people for their addictions and try to coerce them into some kind of recovery, in that kind of different society, there's a good chance that my sister would still be alive.
In 2018, the CDC reported that almost 15,000 people died from a drug overdose involving heroin. That's 7 times higher than in 1999. The opioid epidemic has made headlines for years, yet thousands each year fall into the same pattern of addiction, and for many, eventually incarceration. Chenoir has spent many years researching and reporting on criminal justice reform. She's the editor-in-chief of the nonprofit social justice news outlet, Truth Out, and, along with journalist Victoria Law, wrote the book, Prison by Any Other Name, The Harmful Consequences of Popular Reforms. After years of studying the correctional system, Chenoir argues that the experience of incarceration only worsens the underlying problems that lead people there.
For many people, addiction, mental health problems, diagnoses of mental illness stem from trauma. And while you're in prison, you're in a place that is traumatizing in so many ways. People are experiencing all kinds of violence and deprivation and isolation from their families and communities.
Currently, 328 million people are living in the U.S., and out of this number, 2.3 million are incarcerated, according to the Prison Policy Initiative. Compare this number to China, where there's a population of 1.3 billion, yet only 1.6 million inmates.
Even if you're someone who just focuses on the evidence, we see that prison is not actually the solution to violence. Like, if prison were the solution to violence, then even ignoring the fact that most people are not incarcerated for actual violence that harms people, if it were the solution to violence, then we would be the least violent nation in the entire world because we're the most incarcerated country in the world. And of course, the United States is still an extremely violent country, one of the most. So we need to really take a step back and say, okay, what are our actual goals? Like, what do we want from our society?
Clearly, the ability of these structures to effectively rehabilitate is deeply flawed, and the data reflects this. 2/3 of those released from prison are back behind bars within a few years.
Being released from incarceration, people are in an even worse position in terms of trying to find jobs and housing and education, all those things that help you build a meaningful life and avoid criminalization.
Rehabilitation is not one size fits all. Forced therapy and isolation, along with other punitive methods, can cause lasting trauma, a fear of treatment, and push a person backwards. Instead of receiving compassionate care and continuous therapy, Shenhua's sister Keely was prescribed heavy prescription drugs as a form of psychotherapy while in prison.
She certainly wasn't someone that you would think, oh, she's really out of control and violent. Nothing like that. But at one point, she was prescribed this drug, Thorazine, which is a very, very old antipsychotic that people sometimes associate with late psychiatric institutions or asylums that just kind of like sedates people to the point that they sometimes can barely talk. And this is what she was prescribed in jail just a couple of years ago, something that very, very few people would be prescribed out here on the outside. And of course, this wasn't something that when she got out, that experience of being placed on a high dose of that drug did not serve her when she was out here. It just sedated her while she was incarcerated. But while she was incarcerated, that was called a form of rehabilitation.
From forced drug therapy to confinement-based treatment centers, some argue that the system is designed in a way that makes people, especially addicts, more likely to fail. And there is reason to believe that this may be intentional. The U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics finds that about 8% of inmates in the U.S. are being held in for-profit prisons, creating a direct financial incentive for these companies to keep people behind bars. In addition, prison labor has become a mainstay of cheap means of production for many goods and services, with average wages ranging between 14 and 63 cents per hour across the country.
That's why corporations love prison labor, is you can pay someone well below minimum wage to produce the same product that you would have to pay a minimum wage to someone to produce out here. Also, most of the labor that's happening within prison is to reproduce the prison itself. And so it's to make the food that people are eating in prison. It's to clean the prison and to run the commissary and to just maintain the prison in all of these ways. And so this is one of the scary things that we see about the business of prison, is just how good it is at reproducing itself.
So, what can be done to fix the current situation? Shenhua says the goal should be to fund programs and policies that level the playing field and promote equity.
These things are pretty straightforward. They are healthcare, they are housing, education, really well-resourced education, the arts, recreation, youth programs, and of course, healthcare includes good non-coercive mental health care. We see how many of these things are already present and a given in affluent communities, you know. So we're talking about a massive reprioritization away from these institutions of violence and punishment and toward life-affirming priorities that actually support people and their families in living meaningful lives.
To find out more about this topic and our guest, Maya Shenhua, visit viewpointsradio.org. You can also check out her new book on Amazon.com titled Prison by Any Other Name: The Harmful Consequences of Popular Reforms. For more behind the scenes, search Viewpoints Radio on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. I'm Gary Price. Coming up on Viewpoints.
I'm definitely nervous about it. We all are. That's kind of what everybody's talking about these days, is gosh, can we imagine a future in which it's even hotter?
As if 2020 couldn't get any worse, record-sweeping wildfires and extreme heat are plaguing California. Then,
the government is able to look at us with full transparency, but we can't watch them watching us.
The vast access the government has to each and every American citizen. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.